Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, you can simply watch my game as I've gone simply eighth grade on. Every year I've gotten better. Every year it's been something different. What's often lost is quarterbacks are often a product of their environment and their situation. Those who say I'm a finished product, they really hadn't watched the product.
There's Bo Nix, University of Oregon quarterback, soon to be picked in the NFL draft. Up next, Zachary Neal. From USA Today, covers the Oregon Ducks, does a fantastic job doing it. You can find him on Twitter as well, at Zachary C. Neal, joining us. Zachary, Bo Nix in the draft. What have you been thinking about as it pertains to his NFL future? What's best for Bo?
I think what's best for Bo might be a little bit different from what fans want or maybe what Bo wants. I mean, Bo wants to be as early of a pick as possible. He wants to be an established first-rounder. I think what's best for him is maybe going somewhere where he can sit for a year, somewhere like later first round, maybe second round. I would love to see him end up where, like, the Los Angeles Rams, where he could sit for a year or two behind Matthew Stafford, develop under a great offensive coach like Sean McVay. I mean, I think that would be perfect for him. Of course, he wants to be somewhere where he can play right away, and I don't blame him. I think he'd be successful there too, but if I'm wanting what's best for Bo, I think he could continue to develop a little bit more than wait his turn a little bit.
What do you think that, you know, people have been talking about him, the most unfair rap on Bo Nix, that, you know, what's the narrative you hear that you just shake your head and you go, I've seen the guy all year, that's not the problem?
I think everyone says, I mean, it's the classic thing, he's the checkdown king. They look at his completion percentage, yeah, it broke the college record for highest completion percentage in a single season, say, oh, he only throws less than 5 yards down the field. It's like, yeah, he does that because that's what Oregon's offense asked him to do. If they asked him to throw 10 yards down the field, if they asked to throw him 15 into that intermediate range, I think he would have done just fine doing that. Oregon's offense was set up to where they wanted to get the ball out of his hands quickly and into the hands of playmakers because they had those playmakers all around the roster. So, you know, that's the biggest knock on him, I think. Everyone says that's the low-hanging fruit when you talk about Bo Nix, but I don't know. I've seen his arm a lot. I've seen him air it out a lot before, too, and he does really well at that, too.
Zachary Neal, our guest, USA Today, covers the Oregon Ducks. Who else are you thinking about as it pertains to Oregon players and, you know, in this draft?
I mean, looking at the top, you love to see Jackson Powers Johnson and Troy Franklin, obviously. I'm very curious to see where someone like Bucky Irvin goes.
Yes.
You know, he's an interesting type of prospect. He's not big. He's much more powerful than his frame, like, than you'd give him credit for. He has such good contact balance and rarely gets taken down by the first defender. We saw a great career out of him at Oregon. I'm very curious to see what he does at the next level and what kind of team takes that chance on him. And even what role he fills at the next level as well. He's just someone... I haven't heard about him too much in this pre-draft process because he probably is a fringe third round, probably fourth, fifth round player. But I'm just so curious to see what he does at the next level.
Let's talk about Jackson Powers Johnson. I mean, he's a guy that obviously was at the focal point of Oregon's offense. He may be the highest drafted player if Bo Nix doesn't go early, if he slips down a little bit. But Jackson Powers Johnson, you know, a lot of people looking at him as a center or a guard at the next level.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's so versatile. I mean, he was someone that, you know, Oregon put them where they needed him to, you know, early on in his career. He played guard. He moved around that offensive line. He got the chance to start at center for 1 year, and he was the best center in the nation. First ever Remington Trophy or Remington Award winner at Oregon, first ever in the Pac-12. So it's kind of established that he's an elite, elite player. I've seen it seems like his draft buzz has cooled off a little bit since the combine or since the pro day. People thought that he was an established first rounder. Now he's more, you know, late first round, maybe early second. But I think whoever gets him is just going to get a really, really good player. My podcast co-host, Jonathan Stewart, obviously Carolina Panthers, great. He is begging the Panthers to draft him because he just wants someone like Jackson Powers Johnson on their front line, can play any position you need. And he's going to be around there for, you know, 8 to 10 years at least.
Troy Franklin, you hear a lot about Marvin Harrison Jr. and Rome Odunze and some others in this draft, but I think Franklin's going to be a really good value for somebody picking in the second round, possibly, who could get this guy. You know, how far away is his game from Odunze and Harrison Jr. in your mind?
It's interesting to see because he, you know, he's as talented as those guys. He may not be as physical as those guys. I mean, he is long and a little bit lean, but so fast once he gets the ball in his hands. Those other guys, Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, they're your established, can be in the league, a wide receiver one tomorrow. You know, I'm not sure that the same can be said about Troy Franklin. We need to see a little bit more. We need to see him be a little bit more physical. I would love him more if he added 10 pounds of muscle and could kind of build out a little bit more, but I think the ceiling is really high with him because we saw what he did as the wide receiver one with Oregon. Super speedy, twitchy, great hands. I love his upside.
I'm thinking about the draft and how, you know, I remember at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, you had Brian Kelly of LSU up there with Jaden Daniels, and he was just beaming. And I thought, gosh, he's really enjoying this. He's going to use this to sell recruits. Is the draft a sellable asset for Dan Lanning, or does he have enough to sell between Oregon, the Big Ten, the Division Street? Does he need a high draft pick to hold up tonight to be able to say to recruits, hey, I can get you to the next level?
I don't think he needs it by any means, but it absolutely is the cherry on top. I mean, you've got everything that Oregon presents and what they can do for players at the college level. And then if on top of that, you could say, hey, look, we've got, if they have a first rounder tonight, it'll be their fifth year in a row. They have a player selected in the first round. And even if they don't, they'll have, you know, multiple selected in the second round and third round. There's probably six or seven guys at least that are going to get drafted this year. So Lanning can sell that. We both know that he knows how to sell that. I don't think that's any concern for them. But yeah, if they're able to say, hey, look, we're a first round factory here. We're building like what we did at Georgia, what Lanning did at Georgia. I think that's all the better for him.
Zachary Neal, USA Today, Ducks Wire, covering the Oregon Ducks. Spring game Saturday, Autzen Stadium, big concert afterwards. But I'm really focused, Zachary, on Dylan Gabriel. I want to see this guy. I haven't seen enough of him. I want to see him in Will Stein's offense. I want to see what he looks like because, you know, this is a guy with 49 college starts who could break Bo Nix's record for 61 college starts if everything goes right for Oregon this year. What are your expectations from Dylan Gabriel?
You're saying that you didn't see enough of him in those 49 career games already, John?
Well, I need to see him in this offense. You know, I always hesitate, and maybe it's a little bit of like, you know, we see Cam Ward leaving Washington State for Miami, and I'm going, okay, I got to see him with Mario Cristobal before I can believe this. But I think, you know, I'm interested to see Gabriel and see what he looks like in an Oregon uniform.
I'm with you. I'm very curious to see what he can do with these receivers and with this offensive line specifically. And then, yeah, when you throw in that he's running a Will Stein offense, I think it's going to be, you know, fantastic. I honestly am much more interested to see Dante Moore. We've seen, like I said, we've seen 49 games with Dylan Gabriel. We kind of know what he brings to the table. Moore, I am just so curious to see what he does. With the same thing with these receivers, with this offensive line, with this Will Stein offense. We saw him at UCLA. He had 9 games. He threw 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. You know, he was decent for a true freshman. I want to see where that growth was and what he looks like at Oregon. I know a lot of fans are very curious as well because he does represent the future in Eugene. I mean, he's going to be the guy next year once Dylan Gabriel's gone. So it'll be a really nice glimpse to see early on what he can bring to the table.
Yeah, and I saw him play one game where he wasn't good. You know, I can't remember. Yeah. It was maybe Arizona or Colorado. I can't remember which game it was. He really struggled. And I thought to myself, gosh, it was the Washington State game. And I thought, gosh, you know, for all the hype, is he just not meshing in Chip Kelly's offense? And so Dante Moore with Will Stein, I think it would be a whole nother endeavor. Do you expect Gabriel's the starter, or you go into the spring game going, if Dante blows it away, maybe there's a competition in fall camp?
I don't think so, really. I mean, every coach you're going to talk to and every player is going to say, oh, yeah, they're going to hype up the competition in this because that's what you need to. And in the day and age of the transfer portal, yeah, everything's a competition. There's no starter in spring. Everyone's competing. So you keep them on your roster. I'm not going to say that Dante Moore is going to going to threaten to transfer anytime after just coming this offseason. But I don't think there's too much of a competition. If you were going to put, you know, a percentage chance that Gabriel's the starter, I'd put it like 95% chance. And Dante Moore, baby, he blows everyone away, and he's got a 5-10% chance of starting this year. But I don't think that it's really up in the balance too much. I just want to see both of them play and see what they both can do.
Last year in the spring game, I remember going in saying, I want to see defensive identity from Dan Lanning's defense. And then all we saw were like 50-yard passes from Bo Nix to Troy Franklin and everybody else, Tez Johnson. And it, what, you know, the defense in this spring game, is there anything they can do here that you know, will give you an idea of what they're going to be come fall?
I don't know that you really can see much, because if you do see a dominant defensive performance, then all the fans leave and say, oh, crap, our offense isn't very good. So I think it kind of behooves the coaching staff to be like, all right, let's let the offense show a little bit, and then the fans can feel really good over the summer months. But what I would love to see from the defense is the secondary improvement. I want to see Jabbar Muhammad, Cam Alexander, Kobe Savage go out there and make some plays and show that. I mean, we knew in those Washington games last year, the games that Oregon lost, it was largely because of the secondary and their inability to hold up against elite receivers. If we can see, I mean, even if we see a ton of offensive performance and success, just a couple of turnovers or batted balls or just, you know, havoc plays from the defensive line, get some of these young edge rushers after the quarterback. I know they won't be able to actually sack them, but get pressure on them. I think that would be good to see. But then again, I still want to see the explosive plays from the offense. But, you know, if we leave Saturday and we're talking all about the defense, I think that might be, I wouldn't say a problem, but, you know, something to talk about going forward.
What's the goal in year three? Because Dan Lanning, you know, he goes from winning a bowl game in his first year in the Holiday Bowl to a Fiesta Bowl win and a nice season, except for the Washington games last year. In year three, where's the trajectory for Dan Lanning?
The expectations are high. I mean, going into the Big Ten, obviously their goal is to compete for that Big Ten championship. And if we're being honest, this is a pretty good year to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten, because you've got a down Michigan. You've got a relatively, well, I won't say down Wisconsin yet, because I think they're on the way up. But, you know, Wisconsin's not as good as they could be. Ohio State's going to be something to reckon with. Washington down. I mean, there's not a ton of really great contenders in the conference. So I think their expectation is absolutely make it to that conference championship game. If this team does not make it to the college football playoff, the new expanded version, you know, I think that's kind of the bar in my mind. I think that's probably what they're aiming for as well.
Now, you know, Zachary Neal covers Oregon basketball as well. Zachary, you know, we all saw the images of Matthew Knight Arena kind of sanded down, that Technicolor in deep in the woods court gone. And what have you found out about what is going to go on with the court? What are they doing?
I found out that I think a lot of Oregon fans are pretty happy that they're going through a redesign. And I'm personally the same way. I've been vocal about it over the past few years that, you know, that court was not my favorite. I'm glad they're going through a redesign. You know, I think that over the next, you know, several weeks, it will probably be completed. I think their goal is to finish that new redesign in early June. But
lost your phone there. He's just getting to the good part where he was going to tell us about the court, and he dropped out there. We'll see if Zachary Neal comes back on here.
You got me, John?
Oh, you're back. Okay, so you're just about to get into the good stuff. What is it going to look like? I've been hearing more green, less of the less noticeable trees. What are you hearing?
Yes. What I'm told, they're going to try and brighten the image up. I think it was, you know, when you watched the product on television, it was a little bit too dark. And granted, when you saw it in person, it was better looking and it wasn't as bad. But I think they're going lighter trees, lighter wood, getting a little bit more green in there instead of brown. That's what I hear. I don't know. What do you hear on this?
Yeah, I heard that the yellow was going to go away. It would be less. It would be more green, and that the trees were going to be less noticeable, so toned down. I remember when the court first came out. Do you remember you couldn't even see where are the half court lines, where are the 3-point lines? It was on television in particular. It was really hard to see that.
And it was too distracting. I mean, it didn't look like they were playing on a basketball court. It looked like they were playing on an art mural. So
yeah.
I know that the legendary Tinker Hatfield and Nike creative director Todd Van Horn are designing this, and so, you know, put all your trust in them. I don't think they can go wrong there.
Yeah, well, let's see. And you're right, though. Nobody is unhappy that they're changing this court. So that'll be a good thing. All right, spring game ahead. Follow him on Twitter. Read his work, USA Today, Ducks Wire, Zachary Neal. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Good stuff there. Bo Nix, where will he be picked? You know, some people have him in the 20s. Some have him in the second round. I'll be honest, I did not see him as a first-round guy until I saw this last season. And then I thought, gosh, if there was a team that needs a very experienced quarterback who's very accurate, who is smart, who's a little older, that's not a bad combination for an NFL team. And I'm thinking now about a guy like Brock Purdy. Steven, do you think a guy like Brock Purdy helps the narrative on Bo Nix? Because Brock Purdy started 50 games at Iowa State. The Niners throw him in there after, you know, going through the whole Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo, who can play? And in the end, you end up with Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, and people go, gosh, what a hidden gem. Well, the truth is, nobody at Iowa State, and frankly, nobody at Oregon, who lost that Alamo Bowl to Iowa State, was surprised by Brock Purdy.
I think it 100% helps a guy like Bo Nix, even a guy like Michael Penix, who has been in the college game for so long. I just hesitate to think that this is going to work out when you're drafting 24-year-old quarterbacks and you're going up against 18, 19-year-old defensive kids. Like, it's such a difference,
yeah,
when you're going against the NFL guys. And I think there's a reason why a lot of times these guys have to stay in college for so long is because they weren't going to be first-round picks, but all of a sudden they put up a really good season, and now we're going to say, hey, they're a first-round draft pick. And by all accounts now, Bo Nix looks like he's going to be a first-round pick this year, like based on the betting odds. So I don't know. I think Brock Purdy.
We shall see.
I think Brock Purdy's helped out these guys a lot, and I think that's the easy one to go with, is just say, hey, look, well, Brock Purdy, final pick in the draft. Anybody can do it. But I think that's kind of like what we said with Tom Brady back in the day when he was a sixth-round pick. Well, you can find your franchise quarterback in the sixth round. Well, not very likely.
We'll get in depth with what they're saying about the draft picks coming up. Plus, Anna will be along, and the NFL draft right here on 750 The Game. First round coverage starting at 5 o'clock right here on the station you're listening to. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.